when you heard kind of the process that they went through to get there, it was painful, and it was my process too. It's like putting aside everything you've ever been taught and saying, I'm really good at this. And it all came down really to the biggest problem people have, I think, is self-doubt.
From Washington, D.C., this is The Tightrope. I'm your host, Dan Smolin. Our mission on this podcast is to help you realize your dreams of doing meaningful work. Here you'll meet and be inspired by amazing people who overcame great odds. You'll discover what sparked them, how they explored work opportunities, the strategies that they employed to ensure career success, and the actions they boldly took to make it all happen. You'll also meet esteemed and nationally recognized thought leaders who are helping people like you to develop work skill, experience, and leadership, and seize opportunity from a changing world so that your beautiful work dreams turn into reality. Together, let's turn work meaningful, for meaningful work is the future of work. Public relations executive Amy Stern was successful by the measures that mattered most in the professional world. Her business was profitable and scaling. But she discovered that her work, while effective in its strategy and execution, was mostly done for people that she didn't always respect. Amy lamented that her focus was directed to not messing up, rather than making her work personally meaningful. As the mother of two kids, she couldn't just blow up her public relations career to do something else, so Amy made a bargain with herself to continue to build her practice, but do so expressly on her own terms. And that's when Amy Stern discovered her own bravery to do good and do well in her professional career. In this second part of a two-part episode, Amy describes how bravery transformed her life and career and how it is playing out in the lives of people in the workforce, most especially members of Generation Z who are now entering the workforce. We spoke with Amy Stern at her Washington, D.C. offices in November 2019. When you and I met, and it was through mutual friend Carla Fleming, who also helps me produce this podcast. She's really helped me think out on a lot of levels how to engage with an audience and bring them quality conversation and meaning. But when we had that first meeting, you had asked me a question, and it had to do with something that I said, which was, at some point in whatever the year was, 2016, Dan blew up his business and your eyes lit up.
Yep.
Why?
Because that's what you have to do.
Why is that important?
Well, I think that, you know, my company is called Brave Now. I think that is the first act of bravery. You know, we get into these patterns and we're comfortable and we have some money and... Yeah. You know, but then we're not happy.
Right.
And so for me, I had a former business associate who worked at Ogilvy forever. And he got in touch with me. He was living in New York in like 2012, 2013. Yeah. And he wanted help with PR. And he was the one who could go out and find the clients because he knew everyone. Mm-hmm. And so he started bringing people to our partnership. Mm-hmm. And the people he was bringing were mostly advertising people, mm-hmm. mostly startups, mm-hmm. and they were trying to make their way in a business that was very young, and they were not young. And they were brave. And I said, if you have the guts to do what I know is right in order to get you the press that you deserve, I will bring it to you. Mm-hmm. And they did, and I did. And that's when the whole thing started to gel that, you know, if you're brave, you can break through.
So it's the authenticity of it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Why aren't we brave? Is it because we're afraid of losing income or losing status? Or is it all those things and other things?
I'm not really sure. I think to some people it comes naturally. I mean, that's why a lot of my clients from then on were entrepreneurs, because entrepreneurs by nature are brave.
Yeah.
You know, they've blown up their lives.
Yeah.
And they're chasing a dream. And the best thing about entrepreneurs, the ones that aren't egomaniacs, which some are,
yeah,
is that they listen.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they have so much to do that they're like, you do this, you do it the way you want to do it. If there's anything I don't like, I'll tell you, and that's it.
Well, the bravery for me, and you gave it a name. I didn't really know what I was doing. I had reached a point during 2017 that I just said, I've done all the recruiting that I think I can do. And what it ended up happening was I just felt like I was doing the job for the hiring manager and not for people, not for the talent. And what I noticed, Amy, was that people that I was placing, they were burning out or flaming out. They were like, this isn't working. I can't work here. Yeah, I know you said it was going to be like X, Y, and Z, but it's not anything like that. They're not doing that. I don't know what my job is anymore, and I'm miserable. When I heard miserable a couple of times, and the feeling in the pit of my stomach, I said, I can't add to their misery. And I made a decision. Well, I was at a crisis point. I said, do I just continue on, keeping on, try to keep this business scaling? Yeah, it's doing okay. Or do I blow it up and just go back to some joyfulness from my youth of like, what do I want to do? What would be fun? It was no longer fun for me. And I guess fun's something that I think people relate to, because for most people, work is no longer fun. It's meaningless. It's toxic. You work in difficult places with difficult people. So that's what I think bravery meant to me. It was the freedom to be my authentic self. And then once I was free from my encumbrances, figure out my place in this world to help people. Does that resonate with you?
Yes. As a matter of fact, last night I went to an event. I'm on the board of the American Marketing Association in DC.
Mm.
And we are starting a women's leadership collective. I don't even know if it has a formal name right now.
Mm-hmm.
But they had their first event, and there were four women, all different ages, all different experience levels, talking about how they lead. And I was sitting there, and I was astonished at how brave they were.
Can you give us some examples?
Well, for one, there was a woman actually from the Human Resources Association.
Uh-huh.
And she was saying, one of the things she said that stuck with me was, there are all different kinds of leadership. You can take a piece of a project and lead that well,
yeah,
and it will be satisfying. And you will be proud of the work you do.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can lead a whole team. You know, she said, you just have to start where you are, and you have to I think she actually used the word brave. You have to be brave enough to speak up, get your ideas out there, and convince them that you're the person who can really make this thing and happen. And they all had that story. And it was I just listened to them, and I was like, wow. And they also, the older ones in particular, talked about what it was like to grow up in the 70s and the 60s. Mm. And, you know,
As women.
As women, and how afraid they were. You know, they seemed like they were very bold, very together women.
Yeah.
But when you heard kind of the process that they went through to get there, it was painful. And it was my process, too. It's like putting aside everything you've ever been taught and saying, I'm really good at this. And it all came down really to the biggest problem people have, I think, is self-doubt.
They overthink things too.
Yeah. And they just are like, I can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm afraid to speak up because they'll get mad at me.
Mm-hmm.
And it just changed. I mean, what I realized is that a lot of what I've been doing is in women who have grown in their careers. And if you listen to them talk, the ones who are, you know, the ones who really are leaders, that's what bravery is.
So we're talking about bravery, and both you and I have daughters who are members of the Gen Z cohort. They're entering the workforce now. I would say that their lives have been impacted by a lot of existential crises, environmental, societal. My daughter alone, it's things like lockdown drills in school. She would come home panic-stricken and go, "What's the matter?" She goes, "We had another drill today." Now, with my daughter, I mean, it's bad enough being a kid now. My daughter's got some physical things going on that make her life difficult. She was actually homebound for a couple of years because of her health. But she and a lot of her friends are so brave. It's like these things that they've been exposed to as young people have steeled their spines. I don't know how else to describe it. They get through stuff. They show grit. And I think it's going to impact the way they go about work. That unlike those women that you met who were the pioneers in the workforce who had to let the man on the team take the credit and deal with sexual harassment and other stuff and being paid less than their counterparts who were male. This generation now, they're not going to take it. Are you seeing that too?
Yes. I have been working an awful lot with people that age, people in college.
Mm-hmm.
I have two interns right now from Penn State.
Mm-hmm.
Their resumes were mine after I'd been working for a decade. I mean, they just are so motivated.
Yeah.
And it has been drilled into them that they need experience.
Right.
So, you know, one of them is a photojournalist and a political science major, and she wants to do more with data. I mean, and she's got, you know, a bunch of internships, and she's so involved in on campus.
Yeah.
And the other one is very similar. And I see it in my own daughter, too, because she just wants everything, and she wants it now.
Mm-hmm.
And so she, you know, she's winning internships that no one really understands why she's getting them, but she's getting them. And it's because she is so confident and so smart, and she interviews well, and she's just driven, ambitious in a way I think that we weren't when we got out of school.
Well, ambitious in probably a non-monetary way. Other things are driving her ambition, right?
Well, she, you know, the first two internships she did were free.
Yeah.
Now she is trying to get into one of these, you know, hotshot financial banking programs, and you know they pay them like mm-hmm. $20 or $30 an hour,
mm-hmm.
and it just helps them meet. They also understand that the more people you meet and the more contacts you make, the better off you're going to be. They're like just so they get it. And they're brave. They yeah. will walk into an interview at Morgan Stanley and just nail it. And a lot of their, wouldn't say all their peers are like that, but a lot of them are.
Well, and I think that bravery comes from just a life born out of crisis. I mean, I don't know about you. I think for me, growing up around the DC area, I spent my adolescence here. It wasn't that difficult. The difficulty came from where you wanted to go to college and what you'd want to major in. It wasn't a lot placed on us. We also had a lot of downtime, which isn't always the best thing in the world. Idle hands. not this generation. This generation, I see in them a work ethic that I don't recognize. It's like they are jet propelled in some respects. That they want to get a lot done, and I keep getting to this idea of meaning and what makes work meaningful. And I'm looking at my own daughter and certainly her friends to see what choices do they make? What do they think now as matriculated college students? What do they think now or when they graduate will make them satisfied about the work they do? And I'm not talking just about money. Yeah, you got to earn a living. Our generation, it was... I think the model thrust upon us was the model that our parents saw upward mobility from, the old American dream of, you know, like my grandfather came off the boat in Boston in 1913 with lint in his pockets, and within several years he was a shop owner in New Haven, and within 25 he had built his first custom home. That was the old American dream. That's gone. So many of my daughter's friends, I'm sure your daughter's friends, they're worried about student debt. They're worried about, oh, everything. But it's not immobilizing them. It's stealing their spine. Like you say, it's making them brave.
Well, there's a resiliency in them.
Yeah.
I have a 24-year-old son, too,
yeah,
who lives in Boston and works for an environmental group. And he was like us.
Mm-hmm.
He went to college. He had a fabulous time. He was the king of the campus.
Yeah.
He, you know, there were lots of girls and whatever else they do. I won't go into details, although I know more than I want to.
Yeah.
And, you know, he got out of school and he was just like, he looked for a job and it was so hard for him.
Yeah.
Because he hadn't done those kind of internships and he wasn't there. And he's the very end of the millennials.
Mm-hmm.
So, but he came to me, I guess about a year ago, and he said, Mom, I'm not going to be successful. He said, I will, but I won't make enough money. And I don't, and I have to do something that I care about.
Mm-hmm.
So he started, and I think my daughter came to this realization recently too. They have to have data. They have to understand data. Mm-hmm. They have to understand how data works. They have to be more skilled at it. They have to understand artificial intelligence. They have to get those kind of skills in order to succeed in what is a very competitive market.
Right.
And so they both came to that realization on their own when they were young. And that just shocked me.
Data.
Data analytics.
Well, that kind of makes sense.
It's where the world is going.
Yeah.
I mean, he wants to go, he's going to grad school now to build smart cities. From a political science major who did virtually nothing.
That's fascinating.
Right? But that's the resiliency. There's something in that generation or his generation, her generation, that is just so much more together and professional than we were. And it's fabulous. And that's bravery.
So bravery from a standpoint of building a meaningful work career, what do you think is going to, what do you think bravery is going to contribute to people who say, you know what, I'm not going to get a job just to cover the bills. I'm going to do this right. I'm going to do what's in my heart. Maybe I want to solve some problems. Maybe I want to work with some amazing people. Maybe I want to have the life that work doesn't consume. What do you think bravery is going to bring to the discussion of meaningful work?
I think in order to be happy. And in order to, you work, we all work. We right. work all the time.
Right.
That's just a function of our society. You know, we don't get 2 months off in the summer. We don't have a lot of downtime. So it has to mean something. And I think when you're in professions where you genuinely believe that you're helping other people and you're building things and creating new tools for them,
mm-hmm.
you can really, it is meaningful
mm-hmm.
because there's a greater benefit to society. There's a greater benefit to you because you feel better about what you do. And there are these people that you're helping.
Mm.
I mean, the idea that you're going to build smart cities.
I love that.
I love it too. I wish I could do it. You know, it just sounds so exciting.
There's a company out of Amsterdam that has, well, I'll tell you what they do. They manufacture, design, and install green roofs.
Mm-hmm.
These are vegetation roofs that they put on top of buildings, and they serve a very useful purpose. They cool the building down in the summer, retain heat in the winter. More importantly, they take that storm water and they filter it through all that vegetation so it's not as toxic when it gets into the waste stream again. And my Dutchies are listening. I want to interview you guys. They have a manufacturing facility here in Virginia, in Culpeper. And I'm like, oh my God, if I was young, that would be a company I'd want to work for to be able to do something like that. One, because it's visual. Oh my God, you create something that's a balance of form and function. And some of these installations are, just, I have to tell you, Amy, they're gorgeous. I mean, they give you a sense of serenity when you're in this space that otherwise you wouldn't feel. And I think about them all the time. I had a relative in hospital recently in Alexandria, and I looked out the window to the top of the building, and she was on the top floor, but the floor below that mm-hmm. was all this HVAC stuff, you know, grinding away and spewing heat into the air. It was about 95 degrees the day I was visiting my relative. I kept saying to myself, boy, wouldn't that be cool to do something that adds beauty to this god-awful looking thing that just generates heat and does nothing else. I think that's going to be the kind of work that some people of your daughter's cohort, my daughter's cohort, are going to go after. Not just that one, but things that they say, if I get involved in this, I know my heart's going to be in it, but I'm going to move the needle in society in the right direction. I'm going to make it better, not worse.
Yeah. I mean, you have to remember where they came from. You know, they saw the serenity of being a child torn apart. Yeah. They watched buildings fall down. Right. They watched 3,000 people die. And I know I was supposed to turn the damn TV off.
Right.
But I could not.
Yeah.
I just could not. It was, it was so disturbing that, you know, it was something you just couldn't ignore.
That day, so I'm a parent through adoption. Our daughter came to us through adoption. And that day was the day that the adoption was going to be finalized.
Oh my God.
And the social worker, the caseworker came to our house and she goes, what's going on? And we had to tell her. What I'll always remember about that day was that morning. You know, I was not working that day because our caseworker was coming to finalize the adoption. Our child was still a baby. She has no working memory of it, but so many of older kids do, and that's all they've ever known. And some of them who were born around that time are still fighting wars that were started back then.
I know.
So I can understand how this generation is just saying, no more. We want to change things. And by our sheer force and grit, we possibly can.
Well, look at Parkland. I mean, I lived in Florida for the last couple of years, yeah. Part of the time. And when Parkland happened, look at what those kids did.
Were you here for the rally? Were you in D.C.?
Yes, I was.
We were.
That was incredible.
We got there early. We got to 4th in Pennsylvania. The grandstand was the 3rd in Pennsylvania. We couldn't get any further in. I wanted my daughter to have that experience. I wanted her to be present for that because I wanted her to know you can change the world. It's not just cliche. Look what these kids have done. These kids are your age. Unbelievable. Bravery. Can you imagine going up after the gun lobby and half of Congress and all these PACs who objectified these kids and said horrible things about them and the grit that they had, and they just persevered.
And they got the bill passed.
Exactly.
I mean, it wasn't the perfect bill, but it was a start. And they're still out there. I follow them all on social media.
Yeah.
And they're still out there. You know, I mean, they went on with their lives, which they should have done. And they went to college. But they still, you know, when gun control legislation comes up or there's a big debate, they show up.
You know what's interesting about them? When this happened, a lot of those kids were student journalists. I, too, was co-editor of my school paper here in the D.C. area. It was a very powerful thing to do, to be able to tell stories. I cannot imagine what it was like for them. But what I do know is that their student advisor had the presence of mind to guide them through the gauntlet that they were going to go through in terms of media. These are some of the most media savvy people, and they're young. They're 17, 18, 19 years old. That fascinates me. They are so good at it.
And they've done a lot of good.
Indeed.
They really have.
So this has been really interesting from a standpoint of bravery. You know, the first question I asked was important. I always ask an origin question of my guests because it kind of tells us where we've all come from. What was our starting point? Yours was kind of profound, I would say, and kind of scary. But you wrote something that I discovered in my research on you where you said, we are not born afraid. What did you mean by that?
We're not. I mean, that's one thing you learn when you you come from a background where there's been a lot of diversity in your schools and in your life. We're all the same.
Yeah.
And when my daughter played high school soccer.
Yeah.
And she was determined to go play college soccer.
Yeah.
And in order to do that, we needed to put her in this fancy schmancy league where we traveled around, and you know, she did travel soccer and she competed against a lot of different very talented people, but I didn't have the money for it.
Right.
You know, that was just too much. And I found it somewhere. I don't even know where it came from, but before I committed, she looked at me and she said, "Mom, don't you kill my dreams."
Oh.
Don't kill my dreams. And I was like, oh my God. Mm-hmm. You know, we have to support these kids mm-hmm. in what they want. I mean, you know, I was never the kind of parent who was like, you have to take 4 million different kinds of lessons. But there was always the one thing that they really wanted, and I tried to give them that.
That is so interesting. You know, we had a situation before our daughter got sick. She was this natural athlete, swimmer. And before she had her big growth spurt when she was, you know, 11, 12, 13 years old, she was actually district ranked as a fly stroker. You know, she had this wingspan. What we didn't know at the time was the reason she had the wingspan was because she had this destabilization in her shoulder joints. That's where it all started for her. And it got to a point where it was no longer fun to compete because it hurt so much and she couldn't get through practices. And one thing led to another and she ended up getting seriously physically ill. I tell you this because, boy, I had a lot of guilt about that. That she couldn't do this thing that just, she thought when she was a little kid, someday I can see myself going to college on a sports scholarship. And it wasn't going to happen. And my wife and I were just, you know, we'll have to find another way. But it was so painful because you don't want to see your kids' dreams get dashed. But here's what happened. Came time that she had to write the standard essay. They do things so differently now. You get this one essay that all the colleges gets to see. She wrote the most amazing essay. And it was about how she thought when she was 11, 12, 13 years old, she was going to be like the female Michael Phelps. And then her body fell apart and she was sick and she was in hospital and all these crazy doctors telling her that it was all in her head. It wasn't in her head. She's got some things that she's working through. And by the way, to my audience, she's doing a lot better now. What she wrote in the essay was, I have different passions now. And because of what happened to me, I see that I can get through anything. And I have to tell you, you know, as a parent, you get through these things and you're like, is my kid going to be okay? My kid's going to be okay. I'll call it bravery. She said, you know what? I've been through this thing. It really sucked, but I'm going to find another way. And right now, I think she's headed towards a career in science. She loves exploration.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And she's working really hard. By the way, no social life. I'm like her old man. Yeah. College is, Dad, I'm sorry, I'd love to talk to you, but I got to study.
My daughter is like that too.
I'm so proud of her, but I, you know, my wife and I are like, I wish she would have a little more fun on the weekends, but you know, she's busy. But the bravery is so amazing to me, how these kids now, because of all that they're going through. And I think they realize that it's really up to them to clean up the messes that their parents and grandparents made.
If they can.
If they can. Well, you know, let's hope that they can.
I did want to say something about meaningful work.
Sure.
Because I'm a very strong believer that you can find meaning in the job that you have.
Mm-hmm.
Often people, you know, they're in a career, they've reached a certain plateau. To just blow it all up,
mm-hmm.
especially if you're raising a family, is not always possible.
Indeed.
But there are things in what you do that you can learn to love.
So take us through that. What would be your advice to somebody who cannot blow up their careers because they have to have the cash flow? How do they find meaning, either carve-outs in the work they're currently doing or things additionally that they could be doing? I'm not saying you're going to point them to anything specific, but how would they get through the bravery process to get to that point of saying, I'm going to open up my eyes and my heart to something different that will make my day beautiful?
Well, I think there's always going to be people who should just get another job.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you've got abusive bosses, if
sure.
you have, you know, a situation where they just don't listen to anything you say, they don't respect you, they don't care about you, you should get out. But I think if you're, say, mid-level,
yeah.
and you're in a company, you have to really just look at what it is that you love about it. And there is always something mm-hmm. that you love about your job.
Mm-hmm.
And make that your focus. So, for instance, when I went to work at the agency,
yeah.
you know, I saw that they weren't anti-science, but they just represented sometimes the wrong people.
Mm.
And so I started a practice doing, my thing was, they're going to destroy the world and I'm helping the scientists to save it.
Yeah.
And so I started working with scientists about better communicating the science that they do and making it more accessible to the public. And how do we, and at NSF in particular, it was trying to explain the role that basic research has in science.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very hard because you can't point to a specific thing and then say, you know, like NSF, there was a period where they just took credit for these grants they had funded.
Right.
And, you know, one, they actually did fund the beginning of the internet.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you draw a line from, you know, we gave somebody money to look at the possibilities of doing this for science, and now look.
Right.
You know, it's hard.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, you find something that you really believe in, and I do believe in science, and you figure out a way to work in that piece of it and bring the skills that you have. Because as a former journalist, I was very good at explaining things to people.
Mm-hmm.
And people would go on and on and on. And especially in academia, you know, they just go on and on. And I used to think, oh my God, they're just smarter than me. But when I worked at the Harvard Business School for a year as a researcher. And what I realized was academics are not, the people at Harvard, they might have been better academically than I was.
Mm-hmm.
But they were not smarter than me.
Right.
Because I would go and I would say, so what's your PhD about?
Right.
And they would go on and on and on yeah. and on. And I would glaze over after about 5 minutes.
I've said to my daughter, if you can't explain what you want to do in two sentences, go back to the drawing board.
Well, it's true. I mean, I married an MIT PhD doctoral student, and he wrote a 900 and some odd page dissertation, one of the longest ones in the history of MIT.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't think he was ever going to finish. It took
mm-hmm.
years.
Mm-hmm.
But when he finally looked at me and he told me in two sentences exactly what his dissertation was about, I knew it was done. And I think, you know, if you can help people do things like that, it's very enervating and it's also satisfying.
So, Amy Stern, thank you so much for walking the tightrope. Let me ask, if somebody wanted to learn about you and your company, how would they find you and where are you on social media?
So I have a PR company called bravenowpr.com.
Nice name.
And I also just created a second site called bravenowcontent.com, which has a lot of things that I've written because I find, more than many PR people, I like to write things down. I like to help people do bylined articles. I like to help them get their point of view out of there. I like to help them crystallize who they are and what they believe and why it matters.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of that is journalistic, but some of it is just understanding content and brand and, you know, who should you be? What is your best self? And to me, that's just made my life much better. And I hope it makes theirs better too.
And you have the last word. Thank you so much for being on the tightrope today.
Thank you.
Our thanks go out to Amy Stern for walking the tightrope with us. Links to her social media are included in the show notes for this episode. Our success is your success, but we cannot build our community without your help and support. So if you haven't done so already, please join the Dan Smolin Experience to get our newsletter offering information, tips, and hacks to help you succeed in doing meaningful work. To sign up, simply click the Subscribe to the Dan Smolin Experience newsletter button on our homepage at dansmolin.com. Fill out the short form, then click the Subscribe button at the bottom of the page, and you'll be on your way. Also, become a regular listener of the Tightrope with Dan Smolin podcast. You can easily find current and past episodes by keywording The Tightrope with Dan Smolin at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, on our website at dansmolin.com, or wherever you choose to listen. And don't forget to show your support on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Twitter. You can locate our social media buttons at the upper right corner of our webpages at dansmolin.com. From Washington, D.C., this is The Tightrope. I'm your host, Dan Smolin. And do remember this, our best days lie ahead. Have a great and successful week, everyone.